Welcome to the Untold Stories of Central Minnesota. This is Arts and Cultural Heritage producer Jeff Carmack, and today's installment of the Untold Stories is a bit more contemplative and somber than usual as we visit with poet and author Jerry Hansen about his play, The Wedding of Tomorrow and Sorrow, and his experiences which have led up to the creation of this play. The Wedding of Tomorrow and Sorrow has its world premiere at the Pioneer Place Theater beginning today, Thursday, August 21st, and running through a Sunday matinee on August 24th. The play is a mixed-media presentation about his experiences during the Vietnam War with the 101st Airborne and his reflections upon the war 50 years later. But before we talk with Jerry, I feel that I need to set up the environment just a little bit. When I interviewed Jerry Hansen, I went out to his home, and even though new commercial development along Highway 15 somewhat surrounds it, he and his wife have created a very peaceful bubble where I could barely detect the bustling community that I knew was all around us. And on their land is a barn that Jerry calls a used bookstore, but it struck me as more of a shrine to contemplative reflection upon literature, poetry, letterpress printmaking, and art. It is essentially a labyrinth of peace and quiet, where if one wanted to, anyone could have an uninterrupted discussion between one's mind and feelings and the poets, philosophers, and artists of the past. And it was here that I realized something that was far outside of my frame of reference, for I have never been to war. Whereas in today's world, many in our community have. And of those who have, some may be struggling with their experience. And yet there is hope, as I believe can be heard through this discussion with Jerry Hansen.
My name is Jerry Hansen, and my wife Jeanette and I, we live on 5 acres just between Sauk Rapids and St. Cloud. And we have a used bookstore. It's called Sojourner Station, and we run it out of our barn, and we're open by appointment only. And that's basically what we've been doing for the last 20 years.
You've got quite a major project coming to fruition here this week. All right, now this is a performance being put on at the Pioneer Place Theater. Well, what is this performance, and what's it about?
It's a mixed media presentation. So it will be made up of Vietnam-era photography. The play is a mixed media, and it's about Vietnam, about my time in Vietnam. And then there's a script. You know, it's a one-act play. It should be somewhere between 80 and 90 minutes, and without intermission. And the actor is Dwight Gunderson. He's a very good actor from the Twin Cities. And it's going to be made up of Vietnam-era photography along with an arhu musician. The arhu is a two-string Chinese violin. And rarely do we hear it here in Minnesota. Very few people play it. We found a musician in Detroit. We had to go all the way to Detroit to find someone who could play for this performance. Her name is Xiao Dong Wei. And we're looking forward very much to her being here and helping us with the production.
Yeah, that's an instrument that many people probably haven't heard live before, but yet that's most likely an instrument that people have heard at least.
True. Like, I know it's been used for background music in some movies like The Joy Luck Club and different movies like that that people have seen. It's just hauntingly beautiful music. It's played, I'm not real knowledgeable about it, but it's a two-stringed instrument where the bow is played between the two strings. And then, from what I understand, is that what makes it so difficult to play is that all the notes are achieved in midair on the strings. You don't press the strings completely down to the spine of the instrument or the neck of the instrument, you know. So it's very difficult to play. And the lady who's coming, Xiao, she started when she was 5 years old.
Well, that kind of, I don't know if that kind of gets into a little bit about what the play is then. You've got two cultures interacting.
Exactly. And we wanted to bring the East and the West together with the music. The play is basically about a 68-year-old man. He's a farmer who went to Vietnam when he was 18 years old. And this is a full 50 years after he is back. He's reflecting on the war, and that is the play, basically, or his reflections and his memories of that time when he was 18 years old. And He went to Vietnam.
And is that somewhat why you were drawn to create this piece of work? Because this, you know, did you have that moment of reflection?
Yeah.
And
yeah, most of the things are written out, but it is made up of part fact and part fiction. The play is. The thread that runs through the play is the story of my friendship with David Papish, who was from St. Cloud also. And we went in what was called a buddy group in 1966. The Army offered this. There was a program where you could enlist together. It was called the buddy group. And we went in together, and then we shared a bunk bed down at Leonard Wood, Missouri for basic training, and then we shared a bunk bed at infantry training down at Fort Gordon, Georgia, and then we shared a bunk bed at Fort Benning, Georgia at jump school, airborne jump school, and then we ended up in the same division in Vietnam, the 101st Airborne Division. He was eventually killed. He was the first soldier killed in Vietnam from St. Cloud in 1967, March 1967.
I bet that's something that quite a few people can relate to, not just, you know, Vietnam War vets, but also, you know, we've had these other two wars going on. I mean, do you think that this play and your experiences is something that could maybe, I don't know, bridge a gap between not only generations, but for people dealing with things?
Yeah, I think that Vietnam was different, obviously, from World War II, in that, you know, the country was very united, I should say, that time during World War II. And I really think that's one of the reasons that it has been so hard for Vietnam veterans to reconcile that time. And in that, like, on our worst day in Vietnam, we could never replace Ho Chi Minh with Adolf Hitler. It was just two different wars, and I think you're right that the current wars that we've been involved in probably overlap more with Vietnam than they do with World War II, you know. And I think the play does transcend Vietnam. It speaks to war in a very general way.
Well, yeah, and then also if you think about it, just your general culture within media. You know, if you think about the 70s, you've got people, well, the war, of course, is going on into the 70s, mm-hmm. and then just after that and even into the 80s, people mm-hmm. are dealing with the repercussions, whatever they might have personally. But if you think about the movies that are going on and all of that, mm-hmm. what are those movies? Those movies, you've got a whole lot of World War II movies. And, you know, once again, you come back to, we have an obvious enemy, we need to do this. Mm-hmm. Whereas in Vietnam, there was more of a gray area. Mm-hmm. And, you know, people weren't exactly sure what's going on. So they come back from the war and they've got whatever's going on in their head, but that they're seeing these World War II movies. And those are out there, like, you know, like The Great Escape. You know, if somebody is seeing The Great Escape and maybe they were a POW, you know, what is that doing to them? Mm-hmm. And it can be, I don't think I have a frame of reference, you know, but it's that cultural type thing. I don't know if we exactly have that same thing going on today. Yes, of course, we still have the World War II movies, and mm-hmm. there is still that perception of World War II, but because of Vietnam and because of just the changing dynamics of things, then, you know, it's different. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah. Have you noticed anything like that? Have you, I don't want to say relationship, but that's almost what I'm saying. How are you interacting with soldiers of today?
Yeah, very little interplay really with soldiers who have been involved in these current wars in Afghanistan and Iraq. I just sense that a lot of the same things would apply. You know, one difference might be that a lot of the people going off to these more recent wars are part of the National Guard and the Army Reserve and units like that. Whereas when we went to Vietnam, we just went as individuals, and then we were plugged into a bigger unit once we got to Vietnam. So we never developed that same sense of camaraderie, even like in World War II, I would say, for sure, where people went as a division or a battalion or a brigade and then stayed together through the whole war. It's probably one of the reasons, too, that legions and the VFWs are having a more difficult time these days to to get members and to keep members, you know. Isn't that same same sense of being having been part of a group? I don't think it depended. It varies. Even for even I know some Vietnam veterans who did go over in a group, trained in a group, and went over. So it is different for different veterans. But my own experience wasn't that, you know.
What's kind of the feel of this performance?
Well, I guess what we've tried to do in the play is bring together a lot of different experiences. But basically the thread that runs through the play is my friendship with David Papish, and his nickname was Pappy. I'm just trying to kind of tell our story, how it was back in 1965, 1966. That was very early in the war. At that time, we had just both, we both graduated from high school in 65. We were working together at Finger Hut in St. Cloud. We were loading semis there, and then when we decided to go in, and Dave was always, was kind of enamored with the 101st Airborne, and that's where he had had his heart set on ending up, and that's where we did end up. I myself, was probably headed for the National Guard. I would have followed my older brother into the National Guard, you know. But my own thinking is that we were given words for the foothills, music for the slope, and silence for the peak. And my hope is that the arhu, the music of the arhu, which is sometimes called the instrument of sorrow, can tag off with my words and take us to silence. I first heard the arhu played on the radio about 10 years ago. One day, there was a Chinese musician called Ma Xiaowei, a Chinese lady, and I actually pulled over with my pickup, and just, it was so beautiful, I just pulled over and had to listen to it. I'd never heard such beautiful music, and later on, as the play developed, it immediately came to mind that this is the music I wanted to tag off with my words for this performance. We entertained for a while violin or viola or cello, but there's something special about the arhu that just made it perfect for this play, and I really love that sound.
Very specific environment, if I can maybe paraphrase. It's not just a recreation of the environment. Yes, this is Vietnam. Yes, this is the war, but there's a certain power that this instrument can carry. Yeah. I'm probably not mistaken in saying that, but this is probably a very, very, very old instrument, hundreds, if not thousands of years old. Yeah. You know, as Americans, we kind of forget that our culture is relatively young.
Yes.
Whereas, you know, Vietnam history, or at least that area, but China, existed as a continuous country for a very long time. And so kind of along those lines, you've got this ancient culture, there's something going on, and we're going over there for the reasons that the Americans are going over there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so now, you know, we're there, and it's, well, it obviously turns into quite the mess. If you want to reflect a little bit on just war in general, is that just kind of what usually happens? Or
I make an effort in some of the monologues in the play through some of the characters to find the answer. You know, to find answer, and in the end, I kind of settle on kind of a resignation to the human condition. You know, and I think if we just look, we only have to open a newspaper or turn on the radio or whatever to hear all over the world, you know, currently what's going on in different parts of Africa and the Middle East, and it just seems like war has continuity in it. It's just something that will always be with us, given the human condition. But I think we do need to stop, and we need to look closely at our involvement in these different places in the world, and somehow we have to come to some kind of a vision that takes us in another direction. You know, one thing I've tried to do in the play is to not to point the finger at someone else. You know, the temptation would be in this kind of a production, and there was, you know, that those same names keep coming up over and over, that same litany of Kennedy and LBJ and Nixon and Westmoreland and McNamara. But I tried to say in the play is that basically we're individually responsible for war. It's just the privates, you know, that kind of make a war, that fuel a war. And I really want the play to address that. The play is not so much about dying as it is having killed. I wrote a poem a long time ago just for my two nephews, who are also both my godchildren, Lenny and Simon. And it's just a very terse poem. It goes, "They will say you should be willing to die for your country. They will not say you should be willing to kill for your country. But always remember, you will not have to live with having died."
You're in tune to 88.1 FM KVSC and the Untold Stories of Central Minnesota. Today we're talking with poet and author Jerry Hansen about the upcoming world premiere of The Wedding of Tomorrow and Sorrow, which is taking place from Thursday, August 21st through Sunday, August 24th. And as we get back into the discussion, I ask him a question that I have no frame of reference for, yet I know that many in our community have a very intimate understanding of.
Then I guess, I don't know, this might be a little bit of a stretch, but so the play isn't mostly about war then, but about regaining peace? Is that?
Most of the play, I would say, is basically these reflections of this character, Elmer Mueller, who is trying, as he's getting older, trying to make some sense of it all. I've noticed in my own life within the last few years, I have several friends, close friends, including one of my best friends from when I was 18 years old, who saw a lot of action in Vietnam. This particular friend was in the Mekong Delta, worked on river on these river patrol boats. But after the war, he came back for 40 years, he wasn't bothered at all by the war, it seemingly. And then all of a sudden, he started getting panic attacks, and now he's getting treatment at the VA. And I have two other friends in that same situation who went on, 35 or 40 years, seemingly without having been affected by it. But then here they are, 65 years old, 68 years old, and it comes back. I think one of the things I hope to play will help people through these kinds of things,
So not necessarily, I guess, regaining peace, because as soon as I said that, you started thinking, I'm like, wait, that isn't quite correct. It goes back to like kind of the William Blake. You've got Songs of Innocence and of Experience. Mm-hmm. Well, once you've got experience, you can't necessarily unexperience something. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So then it's there. What's interesting, I know a few friends who have come back from Iraq. But these two friends of mine, they're both women. Mm-hmm. They were driving trucks over there.
Yes.
They both know that they have post-traumatic stress, mm-hmm. and they are both dealing with it in whichever ways that they can. Mm-hmm. How does this strike you as something new? Because this isn't, well, it obviously is new. This is, this, I guess it wasn't greatly publicized, but this is kind of the first time women have been in the middle of it.
In my memory, the time I was in Vietnam, I can't recall seeing a single, obviously, American. I can remember seeing as when I was wounded, and I was in, I got off in at a MASH station on the coast, and there were some Red Cross workers there, American women. But there were no, at that time, there were no women in combat in the service in Vietnam that I remember. But I've seen percentages of veterans that are currently returning, men and women both, and just the percentage of people that are having problems is, I think, even considerably higher than it was in Vietnam, And I think, again, it's so different, but like you say, this is the first time women have been involved at this level, to this degree, through the National Guard and through the Army Reserve, and I can't imagine how disruptive it must be for families and to be sent back and several times, several tours. I have just heard, I don't know anybody personally that's been affected that way, but I've just heard where it's been really harmful, for families. And then
maybe it's also, there's more reporting of it now.
Yes.
People have more of an understanding. We don't call it shell shock anymore. We don't just say, okay, toughen up. And it's like, well, that doesn't work.
Yeah.
not to be a functioning human being.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So.
Yes.
How did the play come about into being? Who helped you put this whole thing together? How did you just? Yeah. How did you make it?
Yeah, I've been writing some of the pieces in the play. Some of the shorter pieces are from a book that I had published quite a few years ago, but the play itself, I really started seriously to put the play together this past January. And the writing of the monologues took me a full 7 months, and I was blessed to find a very good director, Brother Paul Vincent Niebauer from St. John's. It turns out he's been the perfect director for the play in that I brought it. It is a premiere production, and when I brought the play to him, it was very raw. And then we were also blessed to find a very good actor who, his name is Dwight Gunderson from Minneapolis, and he just was very good about helping us shape the play, which we really welcomed. And he's got a lifetime of theater experience behind him. I would say that he actually saw the play, both the director, Brother Paul, and Dwight, they saw the play before I could see the play. I guess even now I still see it more in small pieces. I'm thankful for all the other people that have helped with the play too. I was thinking just this morning how I'm taking on a lot of debt late in life. I owe a lot of people. I've had Chuck Norwood, who is doing the lighting for the play. He's the technical director at the Paramount Theater, and we've become very good friends over the years. And he has been just an unbelievable supporter of the idea of this play, and given me encouragement and moral support from the very beginning. And then Brother Simon Fan, who is also a monk at St. John's University, and he is Vietnamese. He was actually lifted from the roof of the embassy the last day of the war when he was 10 years old, and he'll be doing the projections and the sound. And then I have my wife has been instrumental in just the whole play coming forward. Without her, the play would not have ever developed, you know. She has been just crucial to the whole project. And then along with Shao, who we're very happy to have with on board, just a lot of wonderful people, dedicated people to this project. I'm just thankful for all the people who have believed in the play early on and really been instrumental in bringing it forward.
From what I've heard, what I've understood, it's a very important message. Mm-hmm. So, well, thanks for talking with me today. It should be a great play to see.
And thank you very much.
And once again, we've been speaking with poet and author Jerry Hansen about his play, The Wedding of Tomorrow and Sorrow, which premieres at the Pioneer Place Theater this weekend, running through Thursday, August 21st through Sunday, August 24th. For information on tickets for The Wedding of Tomorrow and Sorrow, you can visit the Pioneer Place website at www.pp5.com. And for individuals who have come to realize that they do suffer from post-traumatic stress, either from military service or as it can develop after other traumatic experiences, there are multiple resources around the community that can be contacted online, including the VA hospital at www.stcloud.va.gov and at St. Cloud State University for students at www.stcloudstate.edu/counseling and through the Anxiety and Depression Association of America at www.adaa.org. This has been Arts and Cultural Heritage producer Jeff Carmack, and the Untold Stories of Central Minnesota is made possible through funding through the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund and has been produced at KVSC, a proud member of AMPRS, diverse radio for Minnesota's communities.